members of the portfolio committee who managed to hit the ground running in my absence for some considerable number of months. I was in the hospital and I did receive your messages and your prayers were heard in heaven, and that is why I am back. The meeting is starting and we have the agenda in front of us. We are going to be doing that short capacity building from the Auditor General. So our main player today is going to be the General, the AG, and we are going to get the audit outcomes of the department from the AG and the IEC one. Take note that the government printing rights will not be done here and today. I'm informed that there has been letters written to the Speaker of Parliament that they request indulgence to present on a later date. So we may not entirely deal with the issues that relate to government printing works. I take it everyone has the agenda of how we're going to run the meeting today. And I want to take apologies, if there are apologies.
Good morning. I've got an apology from Ms. Lukwase. I think she's writing exams. And then also there's an apology from Mr. Lkota. He said he'll be coming late, but he will come today.
The apologies that I have is that Honorable McGlover will be getting in and out in view of other commitments, and Honorable van der Walt. Why do I say van der Walt? Honorable Lizelle van der Merwe will be getting to other meetings. I have not received any other apology, but to take them as they come.
Thank you, Chair. There's also an apology from Angel Kanyile. She cannot make it today.
Thank you, Chair. There is also an apology from Vuyani Pambu. He's going to be late.
I wonder what is that hand for DG, because your meeting starts later than now. Now is the time for Auditor General. So I take it your presence now is just observing and listening to issues that affect your space of work and operation, because if I look at the agenda, your meeting is going to start at 10, am I correct? At 11. So I took it we are present, absent.
Okay. No, it's just an apology for the Deputy Minister that I wanted to register.
Oh yeah, what I wanted to say was that the apology will be appropriate at 11 o'clock. Because that's when will be your formal meeting. Now I take it you want to hear what the AG says about your area of work and operation, so that when you later speak to the issues, you make it easier for members to get through. Yeah, I think without wasting much more time, over to you, AG. I note that the work that you are doing is a very beautiful work. I made this comment elsewhere that you know, AG is one of the institutions that is most trusted by the citizens of South Africa in the current dispensation. So we really do not take the work you do very light. So over to you, and where possible, we have written how much time must be taken here. But we don't want you to go over that time. You can either go this other side of time. If you say 30 minutes, you can take 20 minutes, but you can't take 40 minutes because it will stop you. So it may be important that you focus on the main issues and very critical issues so that members can be better clarified. But I'm quite confident that members have received the documents and they've read the documents. So over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. Just to introduce the team from the Auditor General, I am Phumlani Rabonda, Deputy Business Executive. So I was providing oversight on the audit of Home Affairs and its entities, IEC and Government Printing Works. On my left, I have Joe Machete. He was the engagement leader on the audit of Home Affairs. We have Khaleta Mushe. She will be taking over the audit of Home Affairs going forward. And then we have Cindy Sosivo, who was part of the audit on the IT side, so she's an IT auditor. And then just after the DG, we have Puleru Vimbi, who is the senior manager responsible for the IT audit. So this is the team that will be engaging with the committee today. We'll start with the capacity building slide. A presentation. This is just to ensure that we are aligned between ourselves and the.
Yeah, just now that we have introduced yourself, I'll request members just to, so that as we further engage, we know exactly who we are talking to. Can we start from you, Honorable Van der Merwe?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the team. I'm Liesel van der Merwe. I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Lorato Tito, the member of this committee.
My name is Vuyani Pambo. I'm a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Adrian Ruiz. I'm a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. My name is Joe Meglua. I'm a member of this committee.
Morning. My name is Jerome Mage, a member of the committee.
Morning. My name is Musa Chavan, member of the committee.
Adam Salmon, and content advisor for the committee.
I'm Advocate Thomas Bongo. I'm a chairperson of the committee.
My name is AD. I'm committee secretary.
Who else was introduced?
My name is Nyabolo Mala. So I see my colleague there didn't see me this side because I'm a bit shorter. from the Auditor General of South Africa, manager there.
Okay, thanks. And members, there is a form that is circulating. If it is not, we have not seen it. I'm sure AD will give you the form assessment from the Auditor General. We'll appreciate if you fill in those forms. It's very important. We can proceed from line.
Thank you, Chair. So as I was indicating, we'll just appreciate and honor the opportunity, the invitation received from the committee. So I'm hearing myself. I don't know if there are mics that are... Okay, thank you. Appreciate the invitation, thank you, Chair. We'll already, without wasting time, move over to the capacity building slide. The capacity building is mostly about enlightening the members of the committee about the mandate of the AGSA, specifically with focus on the expanded mandate of the AGSA and how we are implementing those and discharging our mandate. Once we are done with that, with your guidance here, we'll indicate whether we can take questions on those on the capacity building or whether we should then move over to the audit outcomes and take questions at the end. We'll appreciate your guidance on that, Chair.
Members? Listen.
No, Chair, I was suggesting that we take them together and then ask questions at the end, Chair.
I take it we agree on that one. I think let's take that as guidance from members.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning. So I'll be going through the capacity building, which provides more information and insight in terms of what we do as the Auditor General, right? So I will discuss what we do as the Auditor General and also touch on the key expansion of our mandate being the PAA amendment, right? So on slide 2, it highlights the mission of the Auditor General. So we are mandated by the Constitution as a Supreme Audit Institution. So we audit to strengthen the democracy and also build public confidence by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector. So our mandate is from the Constitution, page 4, and also the Public Audit Act, which requires us to audit the financial accounts of government institutions and prepare an audit report on fair presentation of the financial statements, compliance with laws and regulation, as well as predetermined objectives. Slide 6. So what we do is we provide an assurance that the financial statements do not contain material errors. Right. So the confusion is that we provide complete assurance, of which we don't do because we audit on a sample basis and we don't audit 100% of the population. The other thing that we do is we report on the usefulness and reliability on predetermined objectives. So the departments will set their targets and report the achievement at the end of the financial year. So then we will audit the completeness, validity, and accuracy of what they have reported. So we do not provide an assurance that service delivery has been achieved. What else? The other thing that we do is we report on material non-compliance with key legislation. So we phase in key legislation and we don't look at all possible legislation as per the prescript. Right. And we also identify internal controls that should be addressed if there's material findings that we have identified. So what we don't do is to identify fraud, because that is the responsibility of those charged with governance to identify and prevent fraud. Ours is that we need to provide an assurance that the financial statements are free of material misstatements that may come from error or fraud. So the fraud that has an impact on our scope as the audit, that's what we will focus on and determine the impact that it has on our audit. I would like then to go to slide 8, which details the different audit outcomes that we have. Right. So I'll focus on 3, which are the ones that are affecting the Home Affairs portfolio. Firstly, there's a clean audit opinion. Right. So this is the most desired audit opinion. And as I've said, we look at 3 things: financial statements, predetermined objectives, and compliance with laws and regulations. So with a clean audit, the financial statements do not contain any material errors. The predetermined objectives also don't contain errors, as well as there's no material non-compliance with laws and regulations. Right. Then the next outcome would be financially unqualified with findings. So this means that the financial statements do not contain material errors. However, there's issues or errors identified in the predetermined objectives, and also material non-compliance with laws and regulations has been identified. And a qualified audit opinion means that the financial statements contain errors of which management could not correct, right? And there's also non-compliance with laws and regulation and or errors identified in the predetermined objectives. And then how our work relates to that of Parliament, slide 9. So after we have audited, we then, based on committee briefings where we share our audit insights, we share our recommendations, the root causes and corrective action that should be implemented to improve the audit outcome. Right. So slide 10 to 14, I will not dwell much into that, but it has the trend of government as a whole. So my colleague, when he shares the outcomes, he will focus on the trend and pattern that is found at Home Affairs portfolio. But what we can deduce from the national or the government as a whole is that the same trends are also found at Department of Home Affairs. So it's just there to emphasize that there's a bigger problem that we have with outcomes remaining stagnant and the increase in irregular expenditure as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The root causes that are found in government as a whole, you'll also find at at the Home Affairs portfolio, which includes the increase, which includes vacancies in key positions, as well as management's slow response to addressing audit findings. I would then like to go to slide 18, which addresses then the key expansion to our mandate, being the PAA amendment. So with these amendments, there's three things that we need to focus on, right? Firstly, we can refer material irregularities to other public bodies, for instance, SIU, SAPS, and SARS, where it's not part of our jurisdiction to resolve the matters. The other thing is that we can take binding remedial action if the recommendations that we have in terms of material irregularity has not been implemented, right? And the last resort is we can issue a certificate of debt if there has been a material financial loss and our remedial action has not been implemented. So those are the three things that we need to consider when looking at the PAA amendment. So now I've spoken about a material irregularity. So what is this material irregularity as defined by the PAA, right? So there's two things. There should be an irregularity and there should also be an impact, right? Irregularity being there should be non-compliance, fraud, theft or breach of fiduciary duty, right? And it must be coupled with an impact being a material financial loss, misuse or loss of public resources, as well as substantial harm to the public institution or the community as a whole. Slide 21 just gives examples of the kinds of material irregularities that we can find. And one example that I'll touch on is if there is the irregularity is non-compliance with SEM regulation in terms of following competitive bidding process. Right, and the impact for there would be if there's a material financial loss if goods and services were procured above the market value. Right. Slide 22 and 23 just highlights the difference between irregular expenditure and material irregularity. So basically, irregular expenditure is limited to non-compliance with laws and regulation, where a material irregularity also considers theft, fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty, as well as the impact. And with irregular expenditure, the amount that has been spent to date will be irregular expenditure. But with a material irregularity, it depends on the nature. If there is a material financial loss, then that can be quantified. Slide 24. Right. So this addresses the legal obligations of the accounting officer or accounting authority in terms of this material irregularity. And that is what we will use to determine whether the material irregularity has been properly addressed before we can move to the next stage of issuing remedial action or the certificate of debt. So the accounting authority officer is required to, when we communicate the material irregularity, they are required to institute a formal investigation. They have to identify who the responsible party is. They have to prevent further losses that have been incurred, and take disciplinary action against the responsible party, and also, lastly, recover any financial losses from the responsible person. So then, how do we then get to a point where we issue remedial action or the certificate of debt? Right, that can be found on slide 25 and 26, which is just an example of the flow of events when it comes to a material irregularity. So firstly, step one, we, based on our audit, we will identify material irregularity, right? And then we would communicate that to the accounting officer and accounting authority. And then after that, we will conclude based on the action that has taken. This is based on those obligations that I have touched on, right? So if we find that the accounting officer never concluded properly on the matter, we will then issue recommendations in the audit report, right? So that should be implemented in terms of this material irregularity. So in the next financial year, we will come and follow up to determine whether those recommendations have been implemented. And if we find that the recommendations have not been implemented, we will then issue a remedial action, which is binding and which should be implemented at a certain date, right? And then if we come, when we follow up and we find that our remedial action has not been implemented, we will then write a notice to the accounting authority of our intention to issue a certificate of debt, of when we will then grant them an opportunity to provide a submission in terms of why a certificate of debt shouldn't be issued. And thereafter, they will then have to appear at the Material Irregularity Advisory Board, where they will then make a formal oral presentation in terms of why the certificate of debt shouldn't be issued, of which then the committee will make recommendations to the Auditor General himself to issue a certificate of debt. So that's just an example of how the process flows, and it involves every party and everyone has a certain responsibility and time frame. So here it doesn't talk about then us referring matters. So when we identify the material irregularity, we would then determine whether it's within our scope, whether we can refer it to other bodies, of which, based on the relations that we have built with other public bodies, they would then have to do the necessary investigations and keep us updated in terms of the progress of the investigation. Okay. Now slide 28 speaks about implementation of this expanded mandate. So the commencement date of the amendment is the 1st of April 2019, which it was then decided that a phased-in approach will be followed. By phased-in approach, it means that this will only be implemented in certain government institutions, and only a certain type of material irregularity would be looked at. And this is for the 2018-19 financial year. So the government institutions which have been selected are those with a qualified audit opinion or worse, right, and those with high levels of irregular expenditure, right, and the type of material irregularity is that which relates to non-compliance with laws and regulations, which has also resulted in a material financial loss. Right. So the reason behind the phased-in approach is just to provide some time in terms of capacitating and establishing resources and processes for the material irregularity, for building relations with other public bodies, to create an awareness of and awareness to internal and external stakeholders, and for us to also reassess the methodology in terms of how are we going to implement this material irregularity, also being on par with the demands that comes with the PAA. And those and more reasons can be found on slides 29 and 30. And then on slide 31, it just lists the entities where the expanded mandate was implemented. So the Home Affairs, none of the entities or departments in Home Affairs portfolio has been selected because there was none at the time which had a qualified opinion or worse, and therefore they didn't meet the criteria for selection. Perhaps our office will go back and revise in terms of which entities we can expand on. And then slide 34, the role of the oversight and executive authority. So I'll touch on the role of the oversight structure, which is this committee. So should there come a point where one of the entities or the department in the portfolio is selected for implementation, then the role of the oversight body would be, from the audit report, identify the recommendations that the Auditor General has raised, and with that, ensure accountability and oversight in insisting timeous implementation of the recommendation, and also use progress reports of other bodies when they investigate and to influence progress in terms of their investigation. Thank you. That's all from our side.
Thank you. Can we, who's next?
I'll then hand over to my colleague to do the audit outcome.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the committee. I will be taking the committee through the audit outcomes for the Home Affairs portfolio. My colleague, during the presentation, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, Honorable Chair, technologically challenged. Thanks, we are back online. My colleague spoke about the, on slide number 5 of the presentation on audit outcomes, my colleagues spoke about the three areas that we look at as the Auditor General. After looking at the three areas, we express an audit opinion, which is reported in the audit report, which then becomes a public document from our office. The three areas, as she indicated, that we look at the first presentation of the financial statement in terms of the applicable accounting framework, and then also the reliability and credibility of performance information. And lastly, we look at the compliance with laws and regulations. And then after looking at these three areas of auditing, Honorable Members, we then express an audit opinion. She touched on three areas or three audit or possible audit opinions that we express. The first one being a clean audit opinion, which is the financial statements were fairly presented. There were no errors or material misstatements that were identified, and then there were no issues with the credibility and reliability of performance information. And then lastly, there were no issues or non-compliance that was identified and reported in our audit report. So that is the audit opinion that everyone desired to be at. Unfortunately, for this portfolio, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we don't have an entity or a department sitting in that category. Our entities and department are sitting in the category that we call financial unqualified with findings. So this is an area where we have looked at those three areas where we audit, and we have identified that the financial statements that are submitted for audit are fine. They do not have material errors. However, we have identified issues now with compliance and then issues with credibility of performance information. On slide number seven, I would just like maybe to take the committee through this slide so that they can understand the presentation going forward for ease of understanding. So the different audit outcomes are presented by different colors. The first one, being the good one, is presented by the green color on the far left, which is unqualified with no findings, clean audit opinion, and then the second one being unqualified with findings, being the orange, yellowish one, and then the qualified audit opinion being the purple color. I will not touch necessarily on the rest of the colors and the opinion explaining the rest, because they are not actually applicable to this committee. We don't have any institution falling within those categories. The movements between years are represented by the arrows under a bold heading there, movement from previous years depicted as follows. Improvement being the green color, green arrow looking upwards, and then unchanged being the arrow that is vertical, orange arrow that is vertical, and then also regression or regress being the red color, the red arrow looking downwards. Honorable Chair and honorable members, for this portfolio we have three institutions that fall within this portfolio, being the Department of Home Affairs, the Electoral Commission of South Africa, IEC, and also the Government Printing Works. At the beginning, the Chair indicated that the audit of the Government Printing Works is still outstanding. So as we move forward, we will be looking at the two other institutions that we have completed, being the Department of Home Affairs and also the Independent Electoral Commission of South Africa. For now, I'll skip slide number 8 and then move to slide number 9, which is a graph that depicts the audit outcome for the portfolio for the past 5 years. So when looking at the graph or at the picture, one can see that the portfolio actually started bad, in a sense that we had the Department of Home Affairs in 2014-15 sitting with a qualified audit opinion, and the Independent Electoral Commission sitting with unqualified audit opinion, and the Government Printing Works was actually sitting with a clean audit opinion. Moving from there, one can see that the Department of Home Affairs, moving to 2016-17, the Department of Home Affairs improved, and everyone else now was sitting with an unqualified audit opinion with findings. However, honorable members and honorable chair, that has been the story for the next 3 years. Nothing has changed from that. So from that picture, one can see that the outcomes have remained stagnant for the past 3 years, where the department and the entities are sitting with unqualified audit opinion. However, they have findings on or issues on compliance with laws and regulations, and then also issues with credibility of predetermined objectives or performance information. As I've indicated, this graph the bar for 2018-19 there on that slide excludes the government printing works, as the audit is still outstanding. Once we have completed the audit, we'll appreciate it if we can come to the committee and then share the outcome of that entity. The next slide speaks to the credibility of financial reporting, being the financial statements that were submitted to us for auditing. What we identified was that for the Department of Home Affairs, when the financial statements were submitted to us on the 31st of May for auditing, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, they had material errors in them. So these errors, we identified them while we were auditing, and then we gave the department an opportunity to correct these errors, and the department corrected these errors. And then that's why the department is sitting with what we call unqualified audit opinion. If the department failed to correct these errors to our satisfaction, Honorable Chair, we would have actually qualified the department. So we will be sitting in a bad category, to say. We congratulate the Independent Electoral Commission for submitting financial statements that did not have a material error that had to be corrected during the audit process. On the next slide, which is slide 11, this picture actually indicates the performance of the department and the entities within the portfolio, how they performed on credibility of performance information. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, this is the picture looks quite concerning, because out of all the entities that submitted their performance information, all of them had errors that had to be corrected for the performance information to be credible, which is a concern to us. Moving along, on slide number 12, we look at how the department and the entities within the portfolio performed in terms of compliance with laws and regulations. Looking at that picture, one can see that all the Department of Home Affairs and also the Independent Electoral Commission had material non-compliance identified, both in the financial year of 2017 and then also in the financial year of 2018-19. So we have actually not moved in that regard, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The top four non-compliance area, or top four material non-compliance areas, as one would expect, it relates for both the Department of Home Affairs and also the Independent Electoral Commission, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, relates to the management of procurement and contracts, which is an area that is concerning for both the department and IEC. And then also the prevention of irregular expenditure remains a concern on both the department and also IEC. You will see going forward, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I'll speak more to the irregular expenditure and the trend of the irregular expenditure incurred within the portfolio, Honorable Chair. So non-compliance areas remain an issue that is concerning to us. Now we have looked at the three areas that we indicated that we audit on slide number 13. We are now on slide number 13 of 31. So we have looked at the three areas, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that we audit. And from this graph, one can then see where things are getting, where things are going wrong. Because these are the internal controls that the department and the entities have actually put in place to prevent errors being identified on the financial statement, and to prevent non-compliance, and also to prevent any errors on the performance information reported. So looking at that picture, one can tell that implementations, or the effectiveness of implementation of action plans, is an area of concern for both the Department of Home Affairs and also the Independent Electoral Commission. These honorable members and honorable chair, we have reported this area before as an area that is concerning the implementation of action plans, and we are here today again reporting again that this area for us is concerning, and if attended, we believe that it will result at least in some improvement in the audit outcomes. One can also see that when we assess the controls around the reviewing and monitoring of compliance with laws and regulations, for both the department and also the Independent Electoral Commission, we identify that this is an area that is concerning, as we repeatedly report on non-compliance with laws and regulations, as indicated in the slide before this one. So also looking at the IT environment at the Department of Home Affairs, one can see that it's an area that when we assess it, we say that we believe that there should be an intervention in that regard, provided the magnitude of the material, the significance of the IT environment at the Department of Home Affairs. The capacitation of that environment is very critical on the department to deliver on its mandate. So looking at the internal controls, one can see a picture that speaks to the audit outcome to say you are sitting in this category because you are not implementing your action plan effectively, and you are not reviewing and monitoring your compliance area to make sure that compliance is there. And then also the IT environment at the Department of Home Affairs, as I highlighted. This slide specifically speaks to the IT environment at the Department of Home Affairs, which I've already indicated that is concerning and will require some intervention going forward. I'll now speak to the assurance provider, which again now speaks to the previous slide number 13. So we are on slide number 15. So I'll just link this slide to slide number 13. So looking at this graph, one can see that we have assessed the first level of assurance provider being senior management, the accounting officer, and the executive authority as providing some assurance. Ideally, we should be assessing everyone as provides assurance, meaning that we are happy with what everyone is doing. So looking at the internal controls and looking at this picture, I spoke about the implementation of the action plans. I spoke about the reviewing and monitoring of compliance areas. So from this, you can see that those who are responsible for monitoring and review of those controls are doing so, but however the effectiveness of that remains questionable. Hence, we have assessed them as being providing some assurance. And then also the quality of financial statements and then also performance information at the Department of Home Affairs, for example, being concerning. We have assessed senior management there as indeed they are doing their job, however the effectiveness of what they are doing is then questionable, and we have assessed them as providing some assurance. I'll then move along. So now I have given feedback on the audit outcomes. So this is how the portfolio performed, and this is what caused the portfolio to perform in the way that it performed, Honorable Chair. I'll now move specifically to certain specific focus areas that when we audited we looked at, and the first one being financial health of this portfolio. So looking at financial health, one area that when we audited we feel that it should be highlighted and brought to the attention of this portfolio committee is revenue management at the Department of Home Affairs. What we identified during the audit, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is that indeed The department is issuing some debt specifically relating to the penalties that are issued at the port of entries. We are satisfied with the issuing of these penalties. However, the collection of this fine or these penalties that are issued is concerning. The amount that is recovered is very minimal comparing to the amount that is actually issued. And this is an area that we feel that we should bring to the attention of this committee, as we have brought it to the attention of senior management and the executive authority to say it needs to be attended to. For this portfolio, we would just like to congratulate everyone in all the entities within the portfolio that we do not have any entities within the portfolio that has got going concern issues. You know, it's actually a good thing to report looking at the current environment. So we have some good news to tell, Honorable Chair. So moving along to the issue of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditure, and unauthorized expenditure. So the department didn't incur any unauthorized expenditure in the current audit cycle, and then looking also in the last previous audit cycle of 2017-18. However, the department and IEC both incurred fruitless and wasteful expenditure to the amount of 151,000 in the current audit cycle of 2018-19. This is a slight improvement. This is a slight increase of fruitless and wasteful expenditure from 108,000 in the past financial period. However, I must just indicate that the majority of this fruitless and wasteful expenditure emanates from late payment of invoices, where invoices are paid after 30 days and interest is incurred on those payments. For both the Department of Home Affairs and Independent Electoral Commission, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we are happy that this fruitless and wasteful expenditure is being investigated and some monies are actually recovered from those who incurred the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So it's actually a good thing that where money is lost, money is recovered to some extent. On irregular expenditure, irregular expenditure, as he indicated during the presentation, is that so this is where you have procured goods in contravention of key legislation, however goods may actually have been delivered or not, but we don't go to that extent where we check whether these goods were actually delivered or not. Not all of them. So what we identified is that within the portfolio, irregular expenditure has increased from 122 million to 161 million. And the main contributor there being IEC, where a contract was awarded to a supplier. However, the conditions or the criteria used to evaluate that the awarding of that contract was not in line with what was the requirements that were actually advertised. And that resulted in IEC alone incurring irregular expenditure to the amount of 164 million going forward. However, we have only raised irregular expenditure for the amount that was actually spent in the current financial year. The Department of Home Affairs also contributed to that, where deviations were approved without justifications. So this is where contracts are extended, and the justification provided that when we evaluate it as auditors, we feel that the reasons are not justifiable. So it was not justifiable for the department just to go and extend that contract. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I must just note that this irregular expenditure does not include a potential or possible irregular expenditure relating to the ABIS project that was undertaken by the Department of Home Affairs. We have engaged the department, and the department reasonably so requested to investigate possible or potential irregularities, and then they will then, after a conclusion of the investigation, report on whether this is actually confirmed to be an irregular expenditure or not. This amount, so far, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, amounts to about 366 million on that project, and that based on our work we have identified as potential irregular expenditure. Again, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, the irregular expenditure within the portfolio, we are satisfied that where irregular expenditure is being raised at the bottom of the right bottom of the slide, is being investigated. So we are satisfied that where we have identified this irregular expenditure, the department and also the Independent Electoral Commission, they are investigating this irregular expenditure, and when we look at the investigation, we are satisfied that the investigation is appropriate.
Excuse me. Sorry. Can you say it again? 76 or
76? So, Honorable Member Likota, it must have been a slip of a tongue. Okay. 376 million. So on slide 20, this is where we specifically look at supply chain management and look at how the department and also the Independent Electoral Commission performed. So nothing has actually moved from last year. As you can see, both the graph is red, meaning that we had material findings on relating to supply chain management, as I've already indicated, the contract issue at IEC and also the extension of contracts at the Department of Home Affairs. So from last year, there's been no improvement in that area, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll then move on to slide number 21, which looks at consequence management within Department of Home Affairs and also the IEC. So from slide number 21, one can see that the Department of Home Affairs, even though it's investigating some allegations of financial misconduct or SEM misconduct, it must be noted that not all of them were investigated. And it must also be noted that the investigation in some instances at Home Affairs took longer than 3 months to investigate and finalize. Of course, this we look also at the nature of some of the investigations that had to take place, and some we do understand that indeed they had to take 3 months, but here we are just highlighting to the portfolio committee that we have identified those that take more than 3 months to investigate. If the members allow me, I'll then move to slide number 25 of our presentation. So this is the snapshot, a summary of what I spoke about. One thing to note there is that all entities are sitting with unqualified audit opinion, and then irregular expenditure increased. And then we had issues for both the Department of Home Affairs and Independent Electoral Commission on performance information and also on non-compliance with laws and regulations. So one looking at when I started, I spoke about I gave feedback on the audit outcomes, and then I indicated what actually caused which controls collapsed for these outcomes to be that way. And now I'll speak about the key root causes. So when we look holistically at the portfolio to say this is what we believe as the Auditor General, based on the work that we have done on the ground, that these are the areas that are actually causing these issues to appear this way. One root cause from that slide that stands out for both the Department of Home Affairs and also the Independent Electoral Commission is that the speed at which the Department and the Independent Electoral Commission respond to our message is slow. Some of the findings that we are raising are not new findings to the portfolio or to the Department of Home Affairs and also to the Independent Electoral Commission. These are mostly repeating findings on SEM, repeating findings on performance information, and at the Department of Home Affairs raising the issue of quality of financial statements submitted for auditing. So we have identified that, you know, even though management do respond to some to some of our findings, however, the agency to our message and addressing the risk and improving internal controls remains a concern to us, and we believe it's a cause of the audit outcomes that we see today. And also the inadequacy of consequence management at the Department of Home Affairs. As I indicated, yes, the department does investigations and warning letters are being issued. However, this is not having a desired impact on the processes, because you find that we have issues on the same area over and over again, and then it's the same people that are doing that are committing these errors that we identified. However, there is no improvement. So consequence management, the effectiveness thereof remains a concern. One area that I must highlight to the honourable members of the committee and honourable chair is that the vacancies in key positions at the Department of Home Affairs needs to be filled as a matter of agency. I'll just give an example of the chief information system. That position at the Department of Home Affairs is very critical, as I indicated. The IT is very critical for the Department of Home Affairs to deliver on its mandate, and having that position not filled for a long time is just going to delay the department to ultimately reach its goal where it delivers quality services to the citizens of the country. There are other key positions that the department will speak to when they do their presentation, which are key and are not filled. One being that of the account, the DG. As we know that the current DG is acting, it does create some instability at leadership level, not having that position permanently filled, honourable chair and honourable members. So those are the three key root causes, and I'll just summarise them in that there is slow responses to our message, inadequate consequence management, and also the filling of key vacancies throughout the portfolio that we would like to bring to the attention of this portfolio committee. So when looking at that, I would just like to summarize this presentation in slide number 27. This is where we give our overall message to say we have, based on the work that we have done as the Auditor General, we have identified that the audit outcomes are stagnant over the past 3 years, as I've already indicated. And then that there is, so the struggle continues at the Department of Home Affairs to submit financial statements that are free of errors, material errors, and then also the quality of performance reports that are submitted to the auditors for auditing remains a concern. The issue of non-compliance with key legislations remains a concern and a big contributor to the audit outcomes that we are sitting with here today. And also the other major contributor being the fact that there are key positions within the Department of Home Affairs that needs to be filled for the Department of Home Affairs to improve on the audit outcomes and then deliver on its mandate. So based on that, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we came with a few suggestions or recommendations to the Portfolio Committee that would like to make to the Portfolio Committee. One being that the action plans that we spoke about where the department needs to go and implement, we are recommending that this Portfolio Committee on quarterly basis get feedback from management of both Independent Electoral Commission and also Department of Home Affairs on the progress of those action plans. How far are they with implementing the action plans that they came up with based on the audit findings that we raised? We also recommend that the Portfolio Committee, where it can, assist the department in filling key positions, especially at the Department of Home Affairs, as we are of the view, or we firmly believe that those will actually result in improvement in audit outcomes going forward. We also recommend to the committee that the implementation of consequence management, especially for those officials who deliberately contravene the SCM legislation, be on regular on quarterly basis, or depending on how the committee would actually like to have that from both the Department of Home Affairs and IEC, get an update of what is being done about those who deliberately contravene the act, and where money is missing, money is being recovered from them. So from us as the Auditor General, that those are the recommendations that we'd like to give to the Portfolio Committee, to say if the Portfolio Committee can assist the department and also the Independent Electoral Commission, that will result in an improvement, at least in the audit outcomes going forward. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We'll now take questions on the two presentations.
Okay. You are just reminded that I'm the one who's sharing the meeting. Well, welcome, Bambo. And Mr. God. We did receive your apologies about your late coming. Members, here is the report. I would like to take hands. I think we'll take them in that sequence. We'll start there from Honorable Lizelle coming this way. We'll take all the hands. Please note the questions, because we have to answer after the questions. Honorable Lizelle.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the presentation. I think what I'm going to, I just want to make some general observations. What worries me is, throughout what you said, even though the situation of the Home Affairs is not dire, it also hasn't improved. It's not improved in 3 years. So you kept on saying nothing has changed over the past 3 years. Outcomes have remained stagnant. The department struggles with compliance with laws and regulations. Lack of consequences for fraud. Implementation of action plans are not happening. The IT environment has not changed. So my concern really is that there is a general lack of accountability, but also you as the Auditor General, as much as you are doing great work, you also lack teeth. In other words, it can't be that we keep on saying the same things over and over, both as a committee, but also the Auditor General, but yet nothing changes. So I heard from the induction slides you spoke about the certificate of death or the certificate of death that can be issued, but that's only one intervention in some instances. So my question really is, beyond what we can do as a portfolio committee, what can you also do better to ensure that the department actually complies with the recommendations that you are making? Because at the end of the day, you're a chapter 9 institution where recommendations and findings and suggestions should be binding. So really the question is, I want to ask, beyond what you are doing, what other interventions can you suggest to hold them more accountable for what they should be doing? Because I don't think one can have a situation where every year we come back, we interrogate annual reports, and nothing has changed. Nothing has changed in the IT environment. Nothing has changed in terms of vacancies. So really that's of concern. Also, one point that I wanted to ask, you spoke about one of the greatest concerns that you had was the fact that the performance reporting in all of the entities weren't correct. In fact, all of the performance information had to be adjusted. And so maybe you can unpack that for me. Is it because they overestimate their performance, or is it just because the targets are not smart? If you can just give me an indication there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question is on slide 19 on the ABUS report. The AG, you are telling us about the 326 million, but yet on the annual report of the DHA, it's saying 274.6 million. So what is the reason for the discrepancy there? And also on slide 19, our AG was telling us that they are investigating and some of the other monies have been recovered, but they are not being specific on how much money was recovered on the irregular expenditure. They can just give us an idea on how much was recovered from this time on. And I also said with my other colleague here, each and every year you are coming up with measures on how to implement, but we are not taking anything serious because of we are doing this oversight and the monitoring on how money must be spent and all of those things. But the very same directors and officials, they are the ones who are actually doing the actual thing, but we are not doing anything on the data. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. My question is really in terms of, if you look at slide 9, and then some of your root causes on slide 26. You talk about the need for material adjustments and lack of compliance with laws and regulations. So my question, and you also mentioned when discussing slide 26 that some people are committing the errors, same people committing the errors over and over again. So my question really, and looking at the HR constraints, is it a capacity issue in terms of the people that are responsible for this reporting or not? Do not have the competencies or the capability? Because if they do have the capability, then what is the reason for this repeated non-compliance?
Thank you, Jefferson. Listening to the AG, one cannot resist in saying that the report sounds like a horror movie. Looks good there, outside. But what we have been told here today, that things are not as it's supposed to be within Home Affairs. Firstly, I want to acknowledge the report and also the recommendations. But one must bear in mind that, you know, listening to the recommendations, with due respect, it sounds like a repeated plate every time. And I think what we have to add to the recommendation is also to have the AG office, you know, as part of our oversight role, on a regular basis, alone around this table. Because this is a two-way initiative. It's the AG's office, it's the department. So we have to make that clarion call to the AG's office as well, as far as all of these shortages within the department is concerned. Now, one of the recommendations is on the filling of posts. For me, with due respect, it's a pipe dream.
were unfunded vacant positions within the Health Department. There are hundreds and thousands, they are not being filled. That's what I'm saying, it's a pipe dream. Secondly, the criticism on the vacant post, on the reports of the AG, I don't think it is actually genuine. Because we have the Department of Treasury of making various calls on a 5% reduction and all of that. And I can tell you, Chair, my experience to date is that Home Affairs will never be able to fill those posts. There are no money. There are no money within the organization. As far as the expenditure is concerned, it was on every single thing that we have been told there must be a cap on the expenditure. Now, on page 8, we talk about the different outcomes of audits. Now for me, you have IEC also at some times, or many at times, return a lot of money to Treasury. You talk about unqualified audit for the last 3 years. So something must be done to have a clean audit. And if you look at the references on unqualified, on a financially unqualified opinion with findings, again, is compliance, non-compliance with legislature, which, and material irregularities. That also is of great concern for me, and to a greater extent, it needs a political will and appetite to see how best we will be able to address this to have a clean audit. It's similar to what my colleague Father Merri is saying. When it comes to the legal obligations of on how we're going to address this, it is a known fact that the AG's office is a toothless dog. There is no way that they can do anything as far as the implementation is concerned. The problem lies within the organization, where some of our friends and comrades are being redeployed when something is going wrong. And perhaps when the Home Affairs is going to appear, I think there's a need for them to submit this committee a list of all the outstanding cases. Chair, on this presentation that we receive as well, I'm not sure whether it's a coincidence, but I see all my friends to the left, most of them receive the proper presentations, and all my friends to the right, everyone receive the presentation with every second page not in the presentation. I don't know whether that was purposely done, but I was following promptly to the left. Chairperson, the top four problems that we have is procurement and contracts within the organization, and also laws and regulations. So we need to have a list of all of these culprits so that we can follow it promptly as members of Parliament in terms of our oversight. Then it comes today with no surprise from the AG's office that the problem, there's a great problem when it comes to the IT environment within the organization. Now we've asked several questions to Parliament on IT. And I must say that respectfully that some of the professional staff within this department, I think they're taking members of Parliament for granted when we ask questions. When I visited Home Affairs, I've been told for a certain time that there were no internet for 1 month. And responding to our questions, they bravely said that there was internet. I want to speak to the financial health, whereby the Auditor General's office said they are satisfied. But I want to ask to revisit one area of concern when it comes to the revenue. And the word has been used that we are satisfied with the financial health of the organization when it comes to revenue. Now, I've asked a question to Parliament on revenue collect to illegal immigrants by various airlines. Just a quick example. The South African Airlines owed Home Affairs 4 million rand. for the 2017-18 financial year. Emirates is one of the highest. The previous financial year, 2.6 million, and the 17-18 financial year, 6.9 million. Kenyan Airlines, 2.3 million. Qatar, 1.3 million. Now, only this is a lot of money, as far as I'm concerned. But the department also indicated through the ministry itself that no arrangement has been made. There's no plans to get this money. So I cannot see how we, as the AG's office, are being satisfied on how we're collecting this kind of revenue. So there's a lot of revenue out there that we as Home Office actually is able to collect. Fraud, the root cause, and not all have been investigated. So again, here, Chairperson, we would really like, when they appear before us, that you need the necessary as the fraud and lack of action is concerned on the people within your home affairs. And then also when it comes to the root cause, we've been informed that the quality of financial is every time the same. So something needs to be done by the leadership within Home Affairs to address this issue so that we prevent a continuous reoccurrence of what is transpiring. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought you will tell my colleague that the questions he will ask at 11 o'clock. The questions that he's asking.
It comes from there.
So, I just want to get an overall picture of how the AG's office works. Because some of the findings say, if you say competitive bidding process, I'm just thinking to myself, or how do you open that up if you know exactly where the product that you want is lying? Nobody else has got that product. Why do you open it up? It gives me an impression that you simply tick me, or okay, this was not done. I understand the route you take in order to come to your findings. But what if that product doesn't exist in the open market? Are you going to say there was no competitive bidding? It didn't make sense to me. That's why I'm saying it gives me an impression that you just tick in a box, or this was not done, you tick, even if a person explains, or sorry ma, we don't have any other. If I was to give an example, in my previous life I was a director of Arts, Culture and Language Services. And if there's going to be maybe Heritage Day, then I decide going on a bidding process, I decide I'm going to buy a bull in a village. I'm going to ask the villagers to come and cook. There's no bidding there. Just say, get me somebody with a bull. And then I'll go and ask for firewood and so on. And it was said, I should have gone for bidding for a bull. And I go to the village, I buy vegetables from those old ladies who are. So, and then I didn't follow, there was no competitive bidding there. But how much money was saved? If I had gone for bidding, if I remember very well,
for catering, it would have gone up to 90,000, and I only spent 15,000. But I didn't follow any competitive bidding. So I'm trying to say, if you are not ticking, then some of these things would make sense. So I just wanted to understand the way these things work. If you say these vacancies are not filled, there are no funds. So it means the findings will remain that way. I think the funds that are being cut, maybe even in the AG's office, the funds are being cut in each and every department. So what happens? So I understand if maybe you would say, as the AG, you write to National Treasury and say, hey, there's trouble in here. But you simply tick. So General, I just wanted to understand how this thing should work. How do you fill vacancies? No funds. Instability of vacancies? There's no money. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thanks, Chair. I think most of the issues I wanted to raise, they've been raised. There are only two areas where I wanted to get an understanding from the AG. I think just to follow up on the issues which are raised, I think it would be important for the AG to reconcile their position with the Treasury mandate in terms of vacant posts. Because in our understanding is that the Home Affairs, there's no route to fill vacancies when there's a mandate clearly to all the departments in the main, including Home Affairs. Just to reconcile that that area, if it were to happen as the Honourable JJ is raising, that instructions to the AG as a Chapter 9 institution, what will become their opinion in terms of the auditor? The second point is that has been raised. AG may need to elevate issues that are on progress from Department of Home Affairs in the previous financial year, including the one that you are areas that have improved significantly in terms of their mandate and service delivery and areas. The issue of consequence management that the department you are flagging in your report. What is the recourse if there's no action that has been taken? You issue a certificate of death. What is the recourse that the department needs to implement? But also you may need also to assess the accounting officer's role in terms of the... you're not silent in terms of what becomes the opinion of the AG on asserting consequence management at the level of the accounting officers. The last one is on the forced declaration of suppliers and IEC contract irregular expenditure. Perhaps you may need to categorize areas of concerns so that we do understand how you have arrived at a particular and what are the areas of discrepancies on the IEC. I see you indicated that among the issues is evaluation and adjudication criteria. What are the internal weaknesses from the IEC? Thanks, Chair.
Chairman, most questions, Chair, that I wanted to raise have been raised. I do have an issue I'd like to share with the meeting. And it really has to do with partly what Honorable JJ has mentioned. I think we must make it very clear to the Auditor General. They must not be protective of us. The reason we have employed them is so that they open our minds to the urgency and the seriousness of 1 million rand missing or not having been used as it should have been used. That really is what you must do to us. You are the technical people we employed to make sure that where we don't realize the seriousness of an issue or a serious thing has been done, you must open our eyes to that. On the other hand, I also do want to say that to my colleagues and honorable members that, you know, we are the ones who take a budget and give it to the executive, give it to the minister to say, with your director general and so on, please employ the best men and women who will ensure that absolutely minimum of the money is lost on the way. It must do what we have promised to the people on the platforms when we are campaigning to be voted into power. This is an extremely important thing that I think that over the years that we have been in government, I think we, to a very large extent, especially members of the House, have not realized that this responsibility is one that has led to what ESCOM is, the situation in which ESCOM finds itself today, the SAA finds itself today, and so on. So I think we must, first of all, I'm glad that we have been given this information about how many people are not employed, how much money has not been collected, and so on and so on. But I think it could have been done with a much more stronger, perhaps even earlier. Some of the things we are trying to correct this year should have been corrected the first time we went into government. We would not be where we are today. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. How many people are going to be responding?
Two. And then they will add if we need something, but
primarily the two of us will be responding.
Okay, thank you. Members, you'll know that there are issues that we have raised, questions and in particular that and comments that relates to the department itself. I'm glad that the DG is here. We'll also note those issues so that when you start presenting, you also flag the issues that have been raised that relates to the department. But I've listened very carefully to what is the role of the Auditor General in terms of the legislation. And at slide number 6, members, it does tell us what Auditor General does, what they don't do. That is in terms of the legislation. But I'm very happy that there is some extension of a mandate. Which extension of a mandate was done by us in Parliament, wherein now they're able to refer issues to some bodies and also to give some declaratory order on what must happen to some irregularities in the department. Without attempting to respond on your behalf, let's give you a chance to respond to the questions.
Thank you, sir.
In the sequence of having taken them.
Thank you, Chair. I will be responding to the majority of the questions, and then some of them I will pass on to my colleague on the left, Joe. And then if in the case with that we have left some questions, Chair, you will forgive us, maybe indulge us on those questions that we may have left. It won't be intentional that we are leaving out questions. Starting with
No, I won't indulge you. You will have, we'll remind you and you'll have to answer. Yeah.
Thank you. On the first question on what can the AG do better, I think for us it's the main aim is to strengthen the accountability metrics. As we indicated on the when Alassane was talking about our mandate, we exist to strengthen the country's democracy, strengthen oversight, governance, and accountability. And ours, when we are auditing, is that the messages that come from our audit reports and our management reports and the engagement that we have with various oversight bodies is there to say these are the weaknesses that we have identified within the system, and somebody must do something about those. So you'll remember that the principle of separation of powers in South Africa talks about we cannot be the player and the referee at the same time. So ours is to identify and add the irregularities and the weaknesses, get them out in the open, engage with those who we think are the respective role players who can do something about them, and those role players, considering their mandate, they do something about that. However, the implementation of the new powers now kind of streamline the enforcement of some of those accountabilities in areas where we call them these are serious matters, these are there's a serious collapse of the accountability. So the Public Finance Management Act gives the accountability to the accounting officer to first prevent non-compliance, to comply, and in the instances where there are non-compliances, the accounting officer again is mandated to investigate and deal accordingly with those who have failed to comply with the law. Where we are coming to say those are all those things that should have happened. We are coming to identify another material irregularity here. We are saying, accounting officer, go and investigate this thing. Yes, you may not be the one who did the non-compliance, but you are mandated you are obligated by the PFMA to go and investigate this thing. Investigate it. In the case where you fail to do that, the AGSA will direct you. And in the case that you still fail to comply with our directive in that regard, we'll calculate how much has been lost to the state, and you'll be liable to that. So the whole point is that at the first instance, our first price is that the accountability framework within government must be effective and must work. In the cases where it falls or it fails to work properly, that's when we come in with the expanded mandate and see what else needs to be done. My colleague Joe will touch on the question around what was the problem with AOPO. I will park that for now. You will respond on that one later, whether it was an overstatement or understatement of their performance reporting. He will also touch on the question around is there a discrepancy between what we are reporting as the regular expenditure on the ABIS contract versus what the department is reporting as $274 million. And he will also touch on how much was recovered. On the slide that I was talking about investigations of fraudulent expenditure and also investigation of irregular expenditure, you asked the question around how much was recovered. He will touch on that one. And then he will also touch on what were the reasons for the repeated non-compliance. Is it about competencies of people? However, on that one, while he's still going to respond on that one, I just need to indicate that when we are auditing, we focus on what went wrong. So you did not comply with this prescriptive of the law, or this number that you put here is wrong, or you were supposed to develop this, didn't deliver this. That's what we focus on. The underlying root causes, we highlight them as that for the slide that he has underlined to say, the weaknesses in the internal control environment, the instability in governance and all those things, those are the high level of root causes that we highlight. However, in terms of whether somebody is able to do their own job, we do not go to that level because that is done through the investigation. Like I indicated, when something wrong happens, the accounting officer must investigate what went wrong. And that investigation also unfolds this person that I have put in this position of CFO, is he really fit for this position? Because who would have come and say, this CFO gave us financial statements that are wrong. So it becomes the accounting officer who would then come and check, why is that, are we giving financial statements that are wrong? On the issue around filling of posts, there were several honorable members who asked, who commented around this one. So we are focusing on what we call key positions. We take note and very much so appreciate government's position in terms of cutting costs and also reducing the headcount in various departments. And that also applies to the Home Affairs. However, here my colleague Joe made the example of the chief information officer, and that was linking with the one of the causes of the poor outcomes that IT governance and the IT environment need intervention. And it needs intervention. One of the problems there is that the position of the chief information officer has remained vacant for a very long time. And when you engage with the department, they will also appreciate the fact that indeed that is the key position. And that person, there have been various things. The department will talk to that when they have their own discussion. But they've given us various reasons why the position remains vacant. But that for us still a bit of a problem, because if we're talking about a department that is responsible for the information stuff again from birth to grave, and the systems that are supposed to be housing that information, there are problems with the information, the instability in the positions of people who are supposed to be safeguarding that information. That position is very important. It's very key. So we're not talking about the positions of people on the operational staff, maybe at the border post or at the Home Affairs Department offices. Those ones we are part of. We're talking about the key ones. On the list of culprits, I'm hoping that is one of the questions that Honorable Chair was referring to, and the department can touch on that one. The department can be able to share that information. Revenue collection, we are not satisfied, Honorable Members, that around revenue collection. On the slide around financial health, that slide 17, when talking about collection of debt, we are raising this as a concern. So that's why it's that color, which is pinkish red, which says intervention is required. In the current year, the department impaired over 156 million rand of those fines and penalties. Impairing means the probability of collecting those fines is very minimal, if not non-existent. So we are that's a lot of money that those fines are supposed to be levied as a deterrent against people coming to the country without required documentation and approval and those. But if we levy the fine and never get the person on whom the fine was levied to pay over the fine, how much of a deterrent is that? So that is from one point, the deterrent factor. Second point, revenue management from the department to say, in a country where we need to be maximizing our revenue streams and also be minimizing costs, we need to also be maximizing the controls around collecting of all the money that is due to the state. On the question around competitive bidding process, Honorable Member, it's unfortunate that we are not privy to the information around the bull. from our side, I can assure you that our audit process is informed by the National Treasury's supply chain management framework. And that framework, the basic principles of it is that SEM must be a competitive environment. That if I'm purchasing something, there must be an element of competition on that. And the same framework provides for rare instances where competition is impractical. The accounting officer can deviate and go straight to the supplier who's providing that. And our audit approach looks into that. In cases where we say there was no competitive process, we would have looked at saying you did not go out and tender, give us the reasons. We would have assessed the reasons and said these reasons are not justifiable that you are saying it's only one supplier. We look at those things, the circumstances, and then we then reach the conclusion after having considered the circumstances under which the accounting officer would have taken the decision not to procure through a competitive bidding process. I've touched on the cost management for us it's about the accountability framework. That when you look at the PFMA, specifically the Treasury Regulation 4, which talks about the financial misconduct, which gives the mandate to the accounting officer to deal with those things, investigate, take appropriate action, report crime to the police. We want to make sure that those things are happening. The AG does not need to come and say, do it. the framework of accountability, system of accountability within the department must be making sure that those things happen. And also when you look at the public service regulations, which talks to misconduct in general, also they're putting the mandate on the accounting officer and also the executive authority to make sure that those things happen. So the question that around what more can the AG do? For us, we are mostly concerned about the effectiveness of our message. And that is why we have this engagement such as this. That's why we engage with the DPSA. That's why we engage with the Public Service Commission. So that when we're engaging with these role players, we're able to understand whether in the manner in which we're reporting, is it just a pure technical report that talks to auditors only? Or is it a report that the message enables oversight? So that those who need to take action can understand something went wrong here, and what is it that went wrong? What is expected of us? And that's why we appreciate when this feedback that comes when we're having this. When we go back, we are able to refine our messages as we go along. It's a continuous improvement of our messages. My colleague Joe will touch on the question around false declaration, just to clarify what we meant by that. That was a false declaration. Honorable Likota, I'm hoping that maybe I've answered you in terms of empowering Parliament so that Parliament can be able to discharge the mandate in that regard. Chair, thank you. I will then hand over to Joe to answer the other questions.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I will attempt to respond to these questions to the best of my ability, and where there are follow-up questions, the process will follow. The first question that I would like to respond to is the issue relating to the performance information. Honorable Member Van der Merwe asked whether the issue that we raised on performance information related to whether the performance was overstated or not. As the Auditor General, we on performance information, we look at two areas, which is whether the information is useful and whether the information is reliable. We don't express an opinion of whether performance is over or understated. For both the Department of Home Affairs and also the Independent Electoral Commission, what we identified the issue related to reliability of the performance information. Just to give an example, it will be that the department will say, I have developed this system and this system is working. As the Auditor General, we go and we test the system, and the system is not working as management indicates that the system is working. We'll therefore identify that as a serious misstatement of performance, and management will then have to go and correct that that misstatement. I hope that provides clarity of what the issues were. So on usefulness, whether the public in general can actually use this this performance information, we did not identify any issues. So the targets were smart, were well defined, were relevant, and we were satisfied with that. We were just not satisfied with the reliability of that performance of performance information. The Honourable Member asked how much was actually recovered by the Department and also I believe the Independent Electoral Commission from non-compliance relating to irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Unfortunately, I don't have those figures, and I would not like to give the committee information that is not accurate. I would perhaps request that Honourable Chair and Honourable Members be given the opportunity to go and gather that information and report back to the Portfolio Committee, if that would be okay, Honourable Chair. The third issue raised, it related to false declaration, where Honourable Member requested that we provide clarity or more details on what do we mean with false declaration. So this is an instance where a supplier having a relationship, for example, with an employee working at the Department of Home Affairs, where the supplier do not declare that relationship, that I supplier X bidding for this contract at Home Affairs, I have employee X at the department, and that is either my business partner or is an immediate family member. That's what we have actually identified at the Department of Home Affairs. There was two instances that we have actually identified and reported those two instances. And I will not give the names of those suppliers or those employees. That information can be obtained from the department itself when they make a presentation, if members want details to that extent. On the issue of discrepancies between what we reported as potentially irregular expenditure relating to the ABIS contract, we looked at the contract value itself and how much has been spent on that contract. And we reported the amount that has been spent on that contract. That, based on the information that we have, that we had during auditing, it amounts to 376 million. The department maybe can respond to why they disclosed the amount of 274 million. My understanding is that amount will be the amount that was spent in the current financial year. However, this contract, as honorable members might be aware, is that it was actually, it started in the financial year of 2017-18. So we look at the amount cumulatively, combining the amount that was spent in that year and also in the current year that we audited. I think my colleague Rabonda, sitting next to me, will give more information and more context to the specifics on irregular expenditure, specifically the irregular expenditure relating to IEC. I'll just give an overview, and my colleagues will assist me in giving more details with that regard. An honorable member asked, you know, what do we mean when we say that the bidding, the criteria that was used was different from the bid itself. So when a bid is advertised, there will be specific mandatory requirements that says, for example, you shall be a member of this professional body for you to bid for this contract. And so when bids are submitted, one will expect only members of that professional body to submit bids. However, during the evaluation criteria, the department or the institution might decide to relax those requirements and say everyone else who submitted, even if they are not members of that professional body, will then be considered and evaluated. For this specific contract at IEC, and like I said, my colleague will also provide more details. For this specific contract, it was such that during the pre-bidding meeting, it was specifically said that when now potential bidders requested or asked the question of whether they will be considered or not considered if they do not comply with specific requirements, and then they were informed that they will not be considered if they do not comply with the specific requirements. Comes evaluation time, those requirements are relaxed, and other people, those who submitted, now are evaluated without taking that requirement into account. So from that process, one can see that those who ask that question, whether the requirements will be relaxed or not, and not did not submit on the on that basis, were disadvantaged. So the process was not fair to them, because if they knew that the requirement was going to be relaxed, they were going to submit. So they did not submit. So that's how we came to the conclusion that that process was not competitive and fair to everyone else. So, like I said, I'm just giving an overview. My colleague here will give more details, and where I've missed something, he will also add in and then correct me where if I've missed something on that specific contract. I think from my side, unless Honourable Chair, I've missed some of the questions that would then respond to.
Honourable, welcome, Honourable Mulegwa. Honourable Likwata and Honourable Chabane. Any other follow-ups? Ask him. You will speak after Honourable Chabane.
I was only going to say that.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was only going to say that I don't think we want evidence of who did what, as in this case. It's sufficient to say that the AG's office identified this and reported it to the department. If there's need for further intelligence of who did what and so on, the department can then take that up with the Hawks or whatever else has to be, but I don't think we need evidence like that here. I just thought it would be good for us to say that, because we might put our members of all the of staff in difficulties which are unnecessary. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I think I agree with Honourable Gordon that I think that is not the impression we're creating. Two issues just to follow up, sir. I don't think that the AG has exhausted an area of the treasury and the vacant post that you, because you emphasize that you are guided by treasury regulations when you conduct your area of work, and we want to fully understand our position in terms of the mandate of treasury to department, where they must cut off their budget in terms of vacant post. Perhaps you may need to expand on the ABIS contract. The impression that I'm getting, perhaps that is, there may be corrupt activities in the space. I think you'll assist me to better understand. But what is exactly irregular about it? This ABIS contract with a huge chunk of amount. One of the presentation we've been receiving is around the challenges of CETA on the areas of IT, where they are poor. The narrative that they are poor management when our department are sourcing work to CETA, and which affects their financial status at the department of what is the impression of Auditor General? It's not coming clear in terms of their reporting here, in fact, on your recommendation. Those are the three issues I wanted to follow up on those areas. And yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think in all the submissions, there's a general trend. From my colleague specifically, and I think it's not worth mentioning. But one of the challenges that I pick from the presentation, and perhaps that is what has informed my you know, restrained in asking questions, because there is something that we ought to appreciate even as we are asking questions here, is that there is a sense of not fully understanding how systems work. And in many ways, that affects us in understanding who must do what, when and how. And it doesn't seem like, even when we ask, but what happens when this is happening? For example, there are vacant posts that are under moratorium. In fact, the department is under moratorium. Therefore, you can't fill them, right? But you know that because of this vacancy, there flows irregularities, there flows these discrepancies, or there flows these problems that this department finds itself. So you can talk around everything, but because there is this gap that you are told you can't fill, you must live with all the troubles that come from it. And I think this is something that we ought to appreciate. And I think that an urgent matter here is to fill the gap. So, and maybe we must speak directly. The presentation is wishy-washy in this way, not because you are, you know, incompetent or anything like that. It's wishy-washy in this way. You're not saying that which I just said now. There are posts that are not filled, and because these posts are not filled, this is what. And so, when comrades say no, or colleagues say, why don't you say then we are regulated or we are guided or we're under the prism of, you know, treasury? Then what is the conversation? Because you make recommendations, as you've done now. One of the recommendations, even when dealing with a question of CETA, is to say CETA is not doing what it ought to be doing, and therefore there flows these problems. And we can see that it's because of CETA. But you're just going to say there's a problem with CETA and it ends there. Why can't the recommendation be, for example, why don't we insource the service? Right? Hire people and so on. But again, you're going to face the problem of a situation where you're told moratorium. Whereas you can easily save money from giving CETA and insourcing. Insourcing is cheaper, for example. So you insource those services and then you say the money that was ordinarily going, I don't have the figures, I don't know how you would save, I haven't done that sort of analysis, but I'm basically saying in recommendations they look very high leveled, you know, as opposed to saying specifically that if you do X, Y and Z, you know, this will lead to this. So specifically on vacancies, if you say, if you fill this situation of ABs, you fill it, you yourself, when you're answering now, you just said it's an important function. Now, after you say it's an important function, you continue to address the problems that flow from that important function as if that function is not there, or as if that function is there. So I'm a bit sensitive in attacking the minister now, because the minister says, I have vacancies that need to be filled. And then we say, but you're not doing your job. He says, no, the vacancies are not filled. That's why I can't do my job. So what is the role then of us here if we're going to talk around the problem? I don't think you're telling us anything new. We know some of these things. Perhaps one maybe that is needs to be looked at is that one of the pool and all those things, how to source. But the problem is inherently in government now is this thing of tender. That's why you will have that situation. But you have these tenders that are so high that are obviously there's corruption, we all know sitting here, but we're going to pretend like someone followed the rules. We know that they didn't follow the rule. But because we can't catch them on some technicality and it might be too strenuous and it might be touching other people's toes, we're not going to touch on it, we're just going to pass it. As he said, you're ticking boxes. But we know that if we cut tenders, and that's a recommendation you're not making, if you cut these tenders, insource some of the services, core functions of the department, for example, like this one of the CETA. It's a core function of the department. The department without CETA cannot function. We know this. So why do you outsource it? It's like as the madness of this, I mean, I know now I'm speaking to the department directly, the madness of us having banks issuing or helping us process smart IDs. I don't understand it. It's a core function of the department. Why do you need private entities to assist the state? So in no time, what we are going to have is, as we have done, having consultancies assisting, whereas some of the problems we can see them. If we repeat these problems as they are being repeated here, we will end up going to say, there is no solution. Whereas if you speak directly as AG now, say the problem, this is the problem, this is where it flows from. Close here, this is what's going to happen. Close these vacancies, and therefore you will have a healthy department. So I think, Chaplain, perhaps I speak in an elongated way, what I'm basically asking is for us to speak in specifics and in ways that, like, you know, there is a problem of vacancies. These vacancies create this kind of a situation, as the ABs, for example. As opposed to this, philosophical approach to it, I think that is perhaps what I'm asking, Chaplain.
Okay. You see, we're running out of time because we need to take the department. I take it some of the issues members are raising are generally issues that we must be raising with the department directly. Because the AG, you know, the part of our role is to influence policy. So that is our role. So they can't do policy for us. We must influence policy that must be carried. All that they must do is to flag the issues that we must influence a policy on. And I think members must just try to refrain that as if all these tenders then are corrupt, it will be an aspersion, fighter pambo, that not everything. There are those that are done by serious men of integrity and in government who are there to serve the state, and we have seen that, we have evidence of that. And obviously there are those that are influenced by corruption, and in those cases the law.
Sorry, Chairperson, not to disturb you, but I don't know where this thing that you're doing comes in, whether you're responding to me or you're just making a political statement, because if it's a political statement, I'm going to have to respond, and if you're making a submission in relation to what I'm saying, then please locate it, because I'm saying this and it's a submission. So if it's contested, put it as that.
No, it's fine. I'm going to allow the AG to respond where they can respond, but we're running out of time. The submissions, we're not entertaining submissions. We'll make submissions maybe to the department, but the work that the Auditor General was here to do, I think it was done with the greatest respect and the greatest ability by the Auditor General. And I'd wish to thank you for the work you've done, and having flagged all the issues that you've flagged. And I'm specifically grateful that, and welcome, Honorable Minister. I'm grateful specifically that the DG was here. He now has a full understanding what are the issues raised by the Auditor General. So as you take over, just zoom into those issues so that members get to be taken on board about what the department is doing. And I think members quite understand now that the report received from Auditor General will be a yardstick against which we'll be able to use in terms of department's performance and IEC's performance. So, if you have nothing to say, I would want to thank you very much for the presentation. And fly safe back to Pretoria. You can take over, Honorable Minister, and the DG. But we can have a five minute tea break as we usher them out of the meeting, the Auditor General. Yeah, yes. Members, so I request you to fill in the forms.